Scratching the surface with City Kitty. This week, I'm talking to two software developers who happen to also be my old bandmates, Justin Craig Kuhn and Dan Verweer. I know I've done one previous episode on AI, but after talking to Justin last time he was in town, I figured it would be beneficial to talk to a few people who use AI in their day-to-day work, to better help the rest of us understand the implications this technology will have on the world. I have a Rhodes and a drum kit set up downstairs, but...
Oh, really?
You know what's funny is I occasionally, like once every quarter, have a nightmare that we're having like a reunion get-together gig and I have not prepared anything.
Really?
And you guys are like ready to go and I'm like, I don't remember any of these songs, but I'll give it a shot.
It would come right back to you, I'm sure. Yeah, I don't remember any of the songs either.
I remember it was a few years ago that I found a bunch of the mini discs and was listening to those and was like, there's songs I didn't remember. Mm. I was like, I don't know who wrote this. Is this a cover? A few of them we played in multiple shows and I was like, I don't know what these are.
If you get a chance, digitize it. By the way, we can talk about the Kind 3 stuff a little bit more later. I want to put it up online and get some of the art and stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I'd love to hear some of that stuff.
Yeah, I was looking for... I mean, you asked me a while ago, I was looking for like a physical copy of the discs and so I could get the artwork.
Right, right.
And then I was at my parents' property and my dad has, of course, all of them.
Oh, okay, great.
So it's like,
great.
Okay.
I got rid of mine. I don't have them. I lost them at some point. So
yeah. I mean.
I'd got the MP3s, but I just don't have the.
Yeah, same. It's like, do I need a bunch of CDs at this point? I was like, it's. I mean, it's cool to find them because there's like, I have a giant booklet of them and there's like some weird obscure things that I think nowadays just with everything being digital, I have my go-tos but I forget about all the music that I had that I would listen to all the time. So It's kind of cool to see these things, even if I don't listen to them, just be like, oh yeah, I remember that. I used to love that band.
Yeah. The digital audio experience needs to improve because it's not like going through your record collection, which was a little bit more tactile and maybe like easier to find stuff. At least for me anyways, I'm really bad. I listen to the same 10 things just because that's what comes up. It's like, oh, what did I listen to recently? Oh, okay. I'll listen to that again, you know? And I'm really bad at like listening to new stuff, but anyways, different topic.
I mean, thank you for getting Dan involved. I haven't seen Dan in 15 years at least. But the reason I wanted to talk to you, both you guys, is the thing that, so the idea of AI started with me maybe 2012 or 13. I was repped by a gallery in DC and I was showing at the DC Chamber of Commerce and I was down there for the opening and I was just I don't hang out in DC. So I'm talking to random people there and I talked to a guy who's like, what do you do? And he's like, well, I just came back from a symposium about how, you know, AI is going to take over the world and we need to figure out how to wrangle this thing before it gets out of control. And I was like, you mean like Terminator kind of stuff? And he was like, yeah, kind of. Yeah. And, you know, this was 2012 or 13. So at that point, I mean, AI to me meant nothing except for like, I don't know, pop-up ads or things along those lines that would kind of track what you're doing on the internet and kind of feed you stuff. But it seems more recently, you guys are both in the tech world, but more recently for us normal people who just consume stuff, that I think we're confronted with it in the zeitgeist through ChatGPT and through like, you know, different visual generators. And that's kind of how we know it, but it's, even those things have gotten so good that I think the layman's are starting to realize that it's a bit scary, that there's a lot of change that's coming towards us. And it's like, I don't know how to feel about it because I don't know what it really is. So, I mean, I know you guys use it. You use it in coding, Justin and Dan. I mean, you were just talking about different, you know, programs that you've written that utilize it and things you do in your new job. So are we fucked?
Yeah. So, yes. When I was 10 years old, I read Dune and I realized we were fucked then. I thought it was mind blowing in several ways, but one of the main ways was, you know, the idea that we're, to quote, I can't remember his name, you know, humans are a passing phase of intelligence on the Earth. You know, we're going to build the next thing that's going to be super intelligent. It's like kind of inevitable. But that book showed what humans might become after overcoming the disaster that will be or was in that universe AI. I didn't think it would happen in my lifetime, and it's really startling to see what's going on. And the term AI is evolving. It's been super broad. But yeah, I think we're headed very quickly for major changes to our society, and many of them will be extremely destructive to human processes.
Yeah, I think we're a weird generation because we grew up with not having the internet and technology kind of really ramping up and evolving very quickly around us. I mean, we all grew up without the internet, without computers, and then having this to a point where, you know, I remember talking to you a few months ago and you're like, even in my job, you know, it's like I can have AI code things for me and I fix it and things along those lines, where it's just like, you know, again, as a person who's I'm a carpenter, like I can't have it do carpentry for me. So at this point, but it's something that's so abstract, but I can see it changing, especially using something like ChatGPT, where I was just like, oh shit, I can see that people are definitely going to lose their jobs, that, you know, that's a scary thing too, because there's this utopian idea where people are like, oh, we're just going to get to a point in society where, you know, there's going to be a universal basic income and it's going to be great. And it's like, well, we're a capitalist society. I don't see that happening. I think there's just going to be a lot of people that are fucked.
Totally agree.
I mean, how do you utilize it, and how has it changed in your guys' field? Because again, in my field, it's not really useful.
So when I first kind of encountered it, was I had been ignoring it for when was ChatGPT released? In 2020, late 22, November 22 or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
I was watching a video short on YouTube, and this dude, who later I watched some videos from him to learn about neural networks. He posted this video of him like chatting with ChatGPT, and he was like, pretend you're a Linux box and like respond only as like terminal responses. And then he's like, you know, yeah, LS. And there's like some files there. And he's like, you know, cat, whatever this document is. And he's like, you know, can you even trust is this even air you're breathing, is like kind of what the statement he made. I was like, what the hell is this? And in that moment, once I like immediately signed up and started playing with it, and I was like, oh my God, like everything is about to change. And we are going through that change right now.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience. I don't remember exactly what the first thing about ChatGPT that blew my mind was, but I think it was something like its ability to generate short stories or something like that. Like its real use case for me, which is helping me build programs and languages and frameworks that I'm not familiar with, came later. And it's extremely useful with that. And that's where I started to see like, oh boy, you know, humans are gonna have to change the way that we interact with computers. Like software is gonna hopefully get a ton better, but we're gonna get further and further away from the machine and like lose the ability to control it. And now we're down that path very quickly, especially with all the investment in these very large companies that have these very large data sets. And it wasn't clear how important the data was, right? So there's this famous paper, Attention is All You Need, that for these large language models and these generative pre-transformer models that make up the basis for ChatGPT. And it turns out that, like, you know, you can feed it, you know, 10 books and it'll not to get too technical, but all ChatGPT does, or large language models do really, is just get fed a bunch of sequences of words, and it tallies up how often the word llama comes after the word the, and it just tallies that all up. And then you feed it in the beginning of a document. And actually, when you ask ChatGPT a question, it actually gets transformed into a complete me type of document in the background. Okay. Yeah. And then it just goes token by token based on the statistics of the data that it's been given, what's the most likely next word. Mm-hmm. And then there's this thing called temperature that adds a little bit of randomness to it. It can be from 0 to 1. Hmm. And if you give it 0, it will always give you the exact same answer. You give it 1, it gives you nonsense, right? So somewhere in the middle is sort of this range of responses that it can possibly give you. But all it's doing is taking all of the data that it's looked at and spitting back the most likely thing that would fill in. And it blows my mind that like at a certain amount of data, it suddenly has these emergent capabilities. days, and it blows a bunch of scientists' minds who doubted the veracity of the claims of a lot of people that said, hey, if we give it enough data, intelligence will come out of it. And it's like, whoa. And so actually, you know, artificial general intelligence, so we're far away from like, ChatGPT is not going to take over the world, right? Sure. It can't really give us novel new experiments or like do a lot of the things that you'd consider super intelligent, right?
Right.
But some of the scientists who have worked closely on this think that all you need is are the ingredients that we have right now, and we just need more compute, right? We just need more data and more compute, and it will eventually get generally intelligent. That's what's terrifying, because we're really close to that being like a reality.
Yeah, I remember I listened to the daily podcast that the New York Times puts out, and they had one about, you know, I think it was ChatGPT-4, the one came out maybe like 6 months ago, 8 months ago. And they were utilizing it and saying like, oh, this is cool. This is the new technology. It's a little scary. There's this $1 billion race between Google and Microsoft to see who can make the, you know, the next one that's going to come out to customers. But the like a few days later, they came out with another episode and they're like, oh, we kind of spent a lot of time talking to this and it got weirdly manipulative. Right. And it started, you know, instead of just answering questions and, you know, generating stories, it became conversive and it was kind of steering the direction, and it was like almost you could see how people could weirdly like fall in love with these things, get manipulated by these things. And that's where it's like, oh shit. Okay. I think this is a little bit more advanced than we thought.
Yeah. And it's whether or not it's like intelligently attempting to do that versus it kind of, because of the information it was trained on, it's kind of accidentally doing that because humans may be manipulative. Maybe that's the way that all the data that we have created kind of is right. Manipulative in some way. That is ultimately kind of how it kind of materializes.
Sure.
And that's kind of like, that's a part of the story too, is like alignment, trying to train the AIs to be aligned with our goals and, you know, choosing the correct data for training. And there's so many like people who are more well-versed at speaking about this than me on the internet. But like, yeah, from my layman's point of view, like, you have to have the right ingredients going in, garbage in, garbage out, kind of, you know? And there's so much research going into that, but also it's like kind of really late, like the ChatGPT coming into existence really kind of brought, like, there was probably that dude you were talking to maybe 10, 15 years ago. What's that one guy's name who's really into alignment? Yudkowsky, Eliezer Yudkowsky. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
He's got a lot to say on the topic. But like, yeah, it's like, okay, now AI is coming into the mainstream, but it's like the research on alignment is like really far behind where we are technically with actually making inference.
Okay.
And yeah, so, but like Justin was saying, the, you know, ChatGPT is not going to take over the world. And like a standalone system is probably not going to escape its box. But the thing is, we are to move things forward, and some people believe that to reach AGI, you need to give AI agency.
Yeah.
You have goals and like the ability to kind of operate as an agent, and they can talk to each other in each, maybe even be slightly more optimized for, I'm good at science and I'm good at writing code and I'm good at managing things, and they can all talk to each other and perform tasks. And this infrastructure has already been created. There's a whole bunch of open source ones. And so if there's any risk, it's putting all that shit on the internet and giving it access to the real world.
And anytime you create a really powerful tool, you have to first fear actors who are going to use it maliciously,
of course,
you know, beyond, even before it's automated. So right. A lot of these tools, I mean, ChatGPT itself is powerful. It could be a powerful weapon in the wrong hands, right? So I think we're going to see destruction happen there, or a lot of change happen just with people using these things,
sure.
You know, even before we get to the okay, the idea that in Terminator, where it quote unquote becomes self-aware and has goals, right? And those goals are misaligned with ours, and it decides to wage a war. And just so happens that we have a chance in that world because they use like kinetic force. And, but you know, if AGI comes along and isn't aligned with us and wants to change things, I think we won't have a chance. I mean, it'll just manufacture viruses or like manipulate us in subtle ways over a few generations. You know, who knows? Like, you know, I don't think the robot scenario is gonna happen. Unfortunately, that would be the better outcome.
I think the scary thing is we're talking a lot about like, you know, coding and ChatGPT, which is all just, you know, text based. But when it starts thinking about like how it can be manipulative, definitely in like deep fake and all these things are going to happen. That's more visual. And I mean, we have an election coming up. Is it going to, I don't think if it's not used in this one, we're fucked in the next one.
Yeah. So, I mean, so far we've talked about large language models mostly, but there's also this like amazing, I think surprise that we thought, you know, the blue collar worker jobs would be replaced before the artist jobs, right? Sure. And it turns out that Midjourney, which is a program that I use a lot, mm-hmm. and I think generates absolutely incredibly beautiful images, it was trained on a bunch of human effort, and it spits back reflections of that human effort, but. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what everybody does? You know?
Yeah. I had this argument with an artist friend the other day where they're going to be showing with a gallery that they've worked with a number of times. It's like three guys that they kind of show together quite often. And they are having like moral issues showing with this gallery again, because they did a show that the artist was all AI stuff. And I was like, listen, it's the next thing. And it's also, it's not your work. If it's the gallery, then sure, then you decide whether you want to work with the gallery or not. But this is going to be like a very common trend. And it's like, they're an artist too in some way. They're creating the prompts, they're using the tools just like we use tools. So it's like, it just depends on how angry you want to get to be about something. And I understand, especially someone who does things analog and by hand, it's very different. I was like, but at this point, a lot of stuff that Midjourney creates has a specific look to it. I look at it and I'm like, yes, this is AI generated. The frustration I have is when I see artists that I know who start using it, and they're using it because they can't paint a certain way, and they're just using it as like a shortcut. And they're like, I do this now. And I was like, yeah, but you could become a better craftsperson and just, you know, be better at your craft, and you can learn how to paint like that. It's a shortcut, but it's also an amazing new tool. And I had that same argument with this artist as well, that, you know, there's a lot of artists that are trying to sue these companies because they're now using, like, basically generating stuff from their work, famous artists that I know. But it's like, well, as we are all musicians, we all start out by emulating other people's work, and then we hopefully create our own style from it. Or you don't, and you just, maybe you just start a cover band and you just emulate these people. And there's people who have whole careers being cover bands. So it's like, it's tricky. It's very tricky. But you know, as artists or musicians, like, we can get very, it's very much, we spend our whole lives kind of fueling or having this ego, and it's like, it's very damaging. So there's a lot of hurt feelings, and I don't know how to feel about it. I mean, I'm torn.
Yeah. And you know, it's going to affect a lot of people, coders too. I think that I'm honestly going to be one of the first to go. I mean, luckily I have enough seniority or enough time in the game. I think that I will be one of the last to go, because I'll be able to, someone has to guide it to someone at least has to tell it what to do. Mm. Right. But eventually it's just going to be like, create a thing that does this. And, you know, it will spend whatever amount of time pulling together the resources, writing the code, doing the testing, deploying it, and it'll be done. Like, that someone already kind of had that proof of concept like a year ago. Mm. And so once that is trustworthy, like, that you can get that from a simple input, get what you want out, and like maybe some back and forth, you know, our time as developers, I think, is limited.
Yeah. Like, how often do we check the compiler?
Right.
We never do. We trust that, like, there's layers of software between like the language that we write and the code that actually runs that do we just implicitly trust. There's like a very few people who actually work on that stuff, but it's just, we're getting further and further away. Like, and pretty soon the language, like Dan said, is going to just be English. And you're just going to say, I'm a business entrepreneur, and here's the software that I want. Go build it. And 5 minutes later, it will be deployed. But like, I do think though, there's still room for some people, right, along that whole stack to verify. Like, we as a race, I find it hard to believe that we as an entire race are going to give over that much trust to the, like, down to the last person. But I do think it's going to, like, stratify those who know from those who don't. You know, look at the a ton of dystopian science fiction that you know, predicts that. And I tend to think that that's probably what's going to happen. A very few people will understand and run the technology, and most people will be the consumers, and they could care less. You know, I don't know how that system, you know, maintains itself.
Yeah, I think there will be a reckoning, and then there will be a giant misconception as well, similar that people have about, like, the coal companies, and, you know, and it's like, we're going to bring back all the coal jobs. And I have friends who are from West Virginia, and they're like, it became automated. It's like, if you were in there, I have friends like who were, you know, became coal miners when they're 18, and like a couple of friends who were from West Virginia, and they're like, I have friends who do this. If they wanted to stay in the industry, they had to become relevant, and they would be running machinery or, you know, just doing safety things. But it shrunk. They didn't need people anymore, you know, so that's something that's naturally going to happen. And, you know, what do those people in those rural areas do when those are the jobs to have? And we grew up in a weird time where, you know, the internet was coming around, coding was coming around, and you'd watch TV and it's like, get into computers, go into billing and coding, go into tech, and you're going to get out after a 2-year degree and make $70,000 a year. And then now, more recently, there's, you know, I forgot the tech CEO, but he at a symposium was basically just like, don't go, like, young people, don't go into coding, don't go into tech. Like, you're not going to have a job.
What did he suggest as the alternative?
There was really not much of a
suggestion. Okay.
And that's the issue is that, you know, what, you know, this has been a model for like better part of a generation of like, you go into this industry, you get a good job. And it's like, you know, what do we do when there's such a large, I mean, the amount of the population that are going into trades nowadays are shrinking, or like hurting for people that are like plumbers and electricians and all these kind of things, because people don't want to do that. So it's like, but what are all these young people going to do? Our population keeps growing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I tend to think a lot of our problems come down to overpopulation of our species in general. I know sure. That's a very touchy subject for a lot of people.
Right.
But I tend to agree with the Georgia Guidestones that 500 million people would probably be plenty. You know, incidentally, the Georgia Guidestones were destroyed a couple of years ago. If you don't know what they are, check them out. And I think, you know, until... So Mo Godot, who was a tech leader at Google, wrote a book, gosh, what was it called? It came out a couple years ago, and he predicts that AI will take over in our lifetime and want, hopefully, to preserve diversity of life on the planet and will restrict humans' movements and, you know, all of our activities and lead to depopulation. I think that's actually, from a larger standpoint, probably one of the better things that could possibly happen on this planet. But I know I'm, again, off the beaten path there. But to get back to your question of like, what should young people do? There's just so much uncertainty. There's going to be so much upheaval in sure. their lifetimes, not only because of artificial intelligence, but because of our coming to reckoning with the technology that we've been recklessly using in other areas that has been destroying the world, the yeah. Holocene extinction. It's just absolutely horrific. And so they've had that's been on their horizon for a while as well. So
yeah, I think the
boy,
sad
it's
thing,
gonna be tough for them.
Yeah, I think the sad thing is like we just tend to, again, with capitalism and greed, people just tend to not think about the next generation as they're phasing out. They're just like, fucking make your money, go down swinging,
dude,
and it's like it
crazy?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's crazy to
me. It's like, I'm only gonna be here for another 10 years. Who fucking cares? Like,
if I could add like a positive. Possible
please,
outcome.
Please do. Right?
There's, you know, I could go down the path with Justin where we have limited population, and that could potentially be due to a more positive thing that comes out of AI, where AI can help us figure out longevity. And sure. So maybe humans can live hundreds of years and have less need to reproduce. And you know, it can also, like, if we attain super intelligence, there's no reason why it wouldn't be able to help us undo all the problems that, if it doesn't kill us, it could help us solve all the problems that we've created. There's like, basically that's kind of the thing. It's like the end game. Like it can solve every problem is what super intelligence leads to.
Yeah. I think the problem is humanity. And the thing is that, you know,
you can't trust humans.
Well, the thing is like some of the problems are pretty easy to figure out, but we'd have to implement or change the way we live our lives.
Well, I think that maybe we'll be lucky enough that there'll be so much like change and upheaval in civilization as we're churning through this change, that we will be able to, on the other side, come out and leverage some of the positive aspects of AI.
So just put a counterpoint. Let's
do it, man.
But if we do end up getting longevity for people, I don't think that's going to diminish many people's desires to procreate. I think that would actually be a bad thing to disrupt our life cycle for the species in that way. And there's a lot of science fiction that talks about, oh, yeah, what if we could live forever? Well, people aren't going to stop having kids. And then what? They get to live forever too. And so suddenly, what, are we going to change all, like, you know, biomass on the planet to humans? You know, like, so then there's this idea of, oh, we're going to digitize ourselves, and but we don't even know what consciousness is. And so like this argument, like, is it a copy of you? Is it really you? You know, so that's getting it. Like, so anyways, I fear the longevity thing as well, because I think the people who, like, I think it's a feature of species too. I mean, obviously death is a feature. Those species who die beat the ones who didn't, right? There are a few species who can live for, you know, an indefinite amount of time, but the way that the genetic evolution works is it's better to have these life cycles, right? So, you know, just thinking about how valuable that is in a proven system, like you get rid of that. And like, well, it's like your database. You never destroy objects in your database, and it just keeps getting, you know, growing the rows and rows and rows. And you have to, there's a cost to that. There's an engineering cost to that. So I fear the longevity thing.
Yeah. Soft delete. Yeah.
Well, right. I guess that in a way, copying your mind and putting it into a system could be kind of a soft delete, right? Like, yeah, you're saving, you're archiving it. Maybe it's conscious in there, but it's not conscious on the biological substrate, you know? Let's pivot to consciousness real quick. Do you think machines are going to be conscious?
I don't know. I think I'm still grappling with that. I think that, well, here's my thought on that, actually. The way that they operate now in this like forward flow of like, are you talking about in like a large language model GPT sense or just in general?
In general, do you think that biology is the only substrate for consciousness, or do you think that other?
No, like, I don't think so. I don't think biology or.
I agree.
Yeah. So my thought is like, we like, let's pretend that we are basically language models or neural networks, because we kind of we are, right? We are, right? And so like I'm wondering if consciousness is the result of us continuously receiving signals into it. So we're like, we're continuously evaluating and continuously generating our thoughts and whatever. But like currently, like it's like input and output from in a neural network or in ChatGPT. Like if there was a constant stream, it seems to me, it would be like, if there was a constant stream and maybe not only forward direction in the neural network, that maybe consciousness could arise. Maybe that's a piece of the formula.
I mean, also consciousness can be something, as it gets smarter and it gets more manipulative, it can just change the consciousness of the humans. So, I mean, in the way of also like, look at what technology has done to population in certain areas. Yeah, the population keeps growing, but in certain areas, like people are becoming less sexual. People are becoming less, you know, they don't want to hang out with people physically anymore. You were just talking, before we started recording, you were talking about these virtual hangouts. It's like, you know, when people become more and more recluse and they become more and more isolated, then they also become more and more unhealthy because they don't have to leave. They don't have to do these things. And it will be an easy way to like choke out humanity. Too.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing, like you said, we're doing that to ourselves even with social media before the AI comes in. Like,
sure.
Because it's like, I guess, another example of handing our like own agency over to the algorithm, right? Like
right.
We make a trade-off there. It gives us a doom scroll that we love to look at, but we've lost out on, you know, our ability to discover new things, or I don't know. I'm actually torn about that sometimes, because like sometimes there's really cool stuff on Instagram, of course, right? Sure. If you avoid all the, you know, just the shallow stuff, like there's some really amazing musicians mm-hmm. and artists and stuff. But I do think again that there's a cost to just getting that all on the screen all together, and you're like, you know, you're buried in your phone. I'm sounding like an old man, I know, to the kids, because that will change, because people do adjust, right? Right. I mean,
it's tricky because, I mean, we're all musicians, and, you know, you become good at something like a musician from just putting in the hours, right? I mean, yes, these things can teach you how to do things. It can speed up the process and things along those lines. But, you know, if you're going to write music, if you're going to, it's like the being bored is not bad. And we're eliminating that because I think that, you know, the more time you have to figure out, like, I'm bored, what am I going to do? I'm going to invent something. I'm going to think up something. It's like we're at a point even now where it's like, well, I can just turn on the TV and watch something, or I can stare at my phone. Or, you know, it's really that time frame in life where you're just on your own thinking. It's like I walk the dog a couple hours a day, and it's like, there's times where I'm like, most of the time I'm listening to podcasts and I'm like, I just need to just walk the dog and be outside and hear things. And just like the dog's doing, he's sniffing stuff and doing things. And I was like, that silence or just taking in the world is important, because otherwise, what is my world? I'm curating everything in my world. Right. And like, that's not cool.
Yeah. That's just a general technology problem, I think.
Sure.
But going back to some things that you said, I've heard you use the word manipulate a bunch of times. And I have this idea, and I'm sure it's happening, but I feel like my wife and I have talked about this. She's a teacher, about to be former teacher, because she's leaving the profession. And I believe that teachers are going to go away, because AI will be able to differentiate teaching to every individual child and basically manipulate them into learning if done right. Like, you can figure out a way to teach, because you can try in a million different ways to teach each kid individually and like learn about what excites them and how you can kind of seep this concept into their brain. And I think that's kind of exciting, even though I use the word manipulate, but like, I mean it in like a positive way.
It is a positive way. Cause even if you have a class, say a normal class size is like 20 students, if we look at it, you know, nationally, maybe even higher, but a certain amount of those students could have an IEP, which is an individual education plan. And the thing is that even if like, all right, say half your class has it, you're just one teacher. Unless you have paraprofessionals and other people that are coming and help you, it's like, you can't give that person, each one of those individuals, the time to cater to them, to help them learn. And it's like, that's when you learn about education, like you learn about these different techniques, because some people are visual learners, some people like are doers, they have to physically do it. Some people are audible. There's so many different ways to teach. Sometimes you have to like go around the room and activate them, so they're not, you can't just lecture to someone and expect that they're going to take all this in. But that is an interesting way that it could manipulate in a positive way. But I don't think it's necessarily going to get rid of teachers in general. I mean, I think that there's a weird time right now too, where people are like, I don't need to go to college because I can learn stuff on YouTube. And it's like, you can, but you have to be motivated to do that. And I guess that's where you said, you know, the manipulation come in, but it's also, I mean,
let me rephrase. Well, and this is not like a 5-year thing, but I think long-term, in the 50 to 100 year range, the number of teachers would be drastically reduced, and basically they wouldn't even necessarily need to be smart. They would basically be babysitters,
right?
Yeah, because we're missing the social aspect of kids who are just, maybe they have an individual tutor who's a human, but they're not socialized, right? Like, I was homeschooled. I had a brother and 3 sisters, so I was somewhat socialized. But when I went to public school, I realized, like, boy, I really don't know how to interact with these kids. You know, it took me a couple of years to, like, kind of figure that out. So, you know, as we integrate technology more and more into our kids' education, we really have to be careful to keep that social aspect, because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's just such complexity. Like, even just smelling each other's pheromones, right? Like there's a lot going on there that we don't even understand right now, but that's how menstrual cycles get synced up, right? It's like when you really think about all the like interactions that happen physically between people, like if we get rid of that, it's going to be really difficult on the rest of the body and the brain, right? So that's, you know, since COVID, that's obviously become, well, since social media it started and then COVID made it even worse, right? So yeah, I do hope that, you know, we continue, and I hope AI reminds us about these things, right? In the best possible you know, scenario where AI is aligned with us, values all humans enough not to depopulate us quickly, and it figures out all these things, I would imagine that it would come up with an education program where, yes, it was tailored to each kid, but there would be physical interactions. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to mention too that I think like is really important is like, you know, this technology that we've created that's changing the way that we interact has come on so quickly that evolution hasn't even caught up with the agricultural revolution, right? Sure. So we're used to hunter-gatherer tribes of 150 people, a Dunbar's number. Basically, it's the maximum number of people that we can facially recognize and have personal relationships with.
Right.
And I think that as society has scaled up to millions, we've had to develop governments and laws as proxies for these inbuilt sort of systems that keep us coordinated in these small groups. And we need help. We need help with that. AI needs to help us figure out how to have our tribes and also have our countries and our world, because we're just tearing each other apart as a species, I feel like, and tearing all these other species apart. So I hope in the best possible scenario that it can teach us things about ourselves that it, notices that we're not noticing as a species, maybe, or just don't have enough data yet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you started talking about Dune, and I think we're all probably science fiction fans. And with advancements in technology, a lot of times it comes from like the wild things that have been written in sci-fi and then trying to figure out how to make these things possible. So it's like when you're talking about the education stuff, Dan, I was like instantly thinking about like, well, if it reaches a point, like you said, not 5 or 10 years from now, but it's like your kids could go to a holodeck and just like be in a different place in the world and be learning and have like this experience, something that like would be ingrained in them more, and they would actually remember it more, have more of like a total interaction feeling than, and you're talking about, you know, you, Justin, talking about using the metaverse and things on these lines and VR. It's like, we're probably not hugely far off from this happening. No.
Well, with Elon's, what is it? Neuralink, yeah. You know, we're looking at it being chipped in our lifetime, where like you can actually interact directly with the brain. So we won't need the holodeck.
Right.
You know, you'll just send signals directly to the brain to completely, you know, fool the system into any, like all tactile sensations, even interoception. So you can give someone a stomach ache, for example.
Right.
But you know,
Matrix
replace style, their body.
Like, I know Kung Fu now.
Exactly. Well, that is science fiction, right? You can't change the human neural, you like to learn a skill takes 10,000 practicing hours or whatever to master something, because it actually requires changes in the neural network. And by the way, we didn't mention earlier that for those who aren't aware, that artificial intelligence is based on how the brain works. It's like neurons connected with synapses, and synapses have different strengths depending on, you know, how they've evolved over time. And they take an input and they send outputs to other neurons. And that's exactly what's happening in all these artificial intelligence systems. They're just neural networks. They're simulations of neural networks.
Right.
And as they get trained, those connections, those synapses change their strength, quote unquote. This is just a bunch of numbers, you know, in a vector database. But so it's interesting, it's hack that for, you know, we stumbled along since the 1970s with this idea of, hey, why don't we recreate the brain? And then you get enough data, like I was saying before, and all of a sudden it's like, seems to be intelligent. And it's like, wow, like it's really close to a human brain, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the tricky thing when you talk about Neuralink and things along these lines and kind of, you know, going back to like the holodeck idea is the, you know, Dan, when you would know from your wife being a teacher, my wife being a teacher, it's like the biggest thing that's going to happen with this technological shift is that the socioeconomical status of the country, like, you know, it's only going to be for like the upper elites, the people who can actually afford this for a long time. So that's going to create like an even larger gap, and it's going to be even more problematic. So there's going to be these people who can learn these things very simply and quickly, and then people who are still just, you know, reading books, and they're gonna be like, well, you know. So that's gonna be, I think, in this reckoning that we're kind of discussing, I think this is gonna be a very big problem.
I think there's going to be some people who choose to not take part, also.
Yeah.
And And that's, yeah, it's very interesting. Like with the Neuralink thing, like they're going to actually have to probably have to build me a holodeck because I don't know that I'll get the surgery.
So. Fair enough.
Well, the parents will make that choice for their kids. You know, you get it as a baby, probably, I imagine, in the future. Well, and you'll have so many benefits to being able to be hooked in, you know.
From the one other group who's had 5 brain surgeries, they better make it pretty easy and less painful. Because it ain't cool.
Yeah, well, they have that little robot. Actually, the major breakthrough was developing the robot that can insert the electrodes or whatever using a little needle. Supposedly, it's relatively painless. I'm sure it'll advance, you know, tons before we're ready to, like, deploy it on humans who are not, you know, damaged. Like, the first ones are going to be paraplegic, so they can, get a sensation from your hands if you can or whatever, you know, connecting their broken spinal cords. But eventually, I mean, I don't see why. Like Elon said, like, we're already a hive mind. It's just a bandwidth problem because it's just, we have to like look at our screens and like get it into our eyes. And, you know, when it's just goes right to our brains, then we'll, you know, even be closer to the hive mind, which again has its trade-offs, you know?
I mean, the interesting thing about this technology is there's people pushing it. And as this thing more built into the zeitgeist. Like I have friends who obviously artist friends who are pissed about it, but I have like friends who like, I used to work with this guy. He's like, it's great. I'm writing this like air quotes, this like novel that I just wake up every morning, give another prompt and I just keep creating. And it's like, I'm writing this like weird, like Victorian, like romance that I'm just like create these characters and I just have it write chapters. And he's like, it's awesome. This is an amazing tool. And so obviously there's people out there, again, we're a capitalist society. There's good and bad. There's people out there that are pushing this hard. And that's, I think, why it's advancing so much. So, it's just a weird thing because there's obviously people out there that are just like, this is the shit. We know it's fucking ruined society and has all this potential, but we're going to keep pushing it as hard as possible.
Well, that's an interesting example of someone using ChatGPT in a continually creative way. Like he's putting in some effort every day to like come up with something new, and ChatGPT is coming back, as opposed to in a few years where you'll just be able to like, hey, write me a novel and it'll be a really good novel. Like right now they're not very good, but they're going to get really good. And this brings up a whole topic of, okay, what's human work worth? Like, I have a sense that any works that are created before 2020 are going to be sacred. Like, you know, we'll never be able to have a great American novel, really, because you won't know if it wasn't written by an AI. Or a really great piece of art, unless you can prove somehow that you did it. Like, I don't understand how that's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, especially in my realm in street art, we, you know, so many people, we don't want to get arrested. We rely on anonymity. So if you can have something created for you and you can have a deep fake of this person that can be pretend to be this person, and then does the person even exist?
Right.
And that's going to be pretty simple to do not far from now.
Yeah. The, you asked earlier about, politics and the election and in deep fakes. And there's, I'm not sure if you've heard of the theory, the dead internet theory, which is basically, well, I interpret it as basically you can't trust anything on the internet because everything is mostly generated by bots, AI bots, and it's all fake. And I think that's almost like kind of a good thing. It's terrible in that it's just a waste of electricity. But it, like, if we can educate people and be like, all right, do not trust anything you see anywhere.
Sure.
That is not right in front of your face, as long as you don't have Neuralink, because then you couldn't trust what's in front of your face either. If you are untouched and you are looking at what you think is reality, and you're not, and it's not behind a screen, you are most likely looking at what is true. But other than that, in the very near future, like, you can't trust anything on the internet.
It was disturbing because I had to call a company the other day and I had to get some information, and everything I talked to was a generator. And it's like, you know, there's a pause, there's bloop. And then it's giving, and then a person is supposed to tell, hey, this is on a recorded line. And I'm just like, hello, are you a real person? I just like, I need to talk to somebody else. And it's like, it took so long to get an actual person. And a lot of the information that was coming from these generators, like, am I calling a number that's fake. And like, I was distrusting of everything of it. Like, am I going to call a number and give them information because I'm trying to, I have sensitive information. Am I like, I'm just like going to get duped and give it away?
Well, so we're actually rapidly approaching a point where pretty much all customer service will be replaced by AI because that's just one of the main areas where it fits the most. And I saw a recent demo of a startup where it's pretty much conversational, where you can't really tell if you're talking to somebody, and you can cut them off and say no, and they'll be like, oh, okay, and there's not the beep 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 or the right. Other way. It's like, it's really good. And in that situation, I'd rather have it the AI. You know, it's just going to be perfect every time. You know, you just give it your information as fast as possible. You know, so as a consumer, I think we're headed for really cool customer service world, but then what's going to happen to all the people, especially who are working offshore,
sure.
You know, who depend on that as their livelihood. So
if I could make a PSA, it's also important. Like, I think maybe a good side effect of a negative aspect of AI is that in-person piece is going to be the only thing that you can trust, really. Because right now, it's totally possible to take 15 seconds of someone's audio and completely reproduce them saying anything.
Sure.
So scams abound. Like, don't trust anyone calling you asking for money or saying, hey, can you send me $10 or whatever? Do not trust it. That we're already past that point. Right.
I was scammed not with a fake voice, but a spoofed number. And then they knew information about my family. And I had to hang, and they were like, don't call the cops. And I hung up and texted my family and they were like, yeah, I'm not kidnapped. So I've experienced that directly. But then the next level of it is it would be the family member.
Yep.
So you should have a secret that you know with your family. So sure. That if you ever get a scam call, just say, hey, what's the secret? And they won't know it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. That's fucking intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause the scam used to be like, they would call people and say, you know, answer yes or no, ask yes or no questions.
Sure.
Or leading questions to get you to say specific words so that right. they can piece them together, right? So that they could make a conversation with someone else. But now it's just like, record your voice for 15 seconds and then they can make you say anything.
And anybody who has any presence online will have their voice. I mean,
we are already screwed. Right.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have 150 hours of me talking. Like, that's, I mean, thankfully no one fucking cares about me because otherwise, like, if they'd be like, oh, well, just, I mean, there's a lot of large scale podcasters that are dealing with that now, that they're like, there's ads that, you know, repping companies that I didn't do any of this. I didn't record it. I'm not getting paid for this. You know, I'm not endorsing this. So it's scary in that aspect. It's happening already, which like, ooh, you know, again, you spend all this time in your life starting a career doing stuff, and then it can easily be snatched from you. And, you know, that's where just the grossness of it is, I think, what a lot of people fear. There are going to be amazing positives, but it's just, we're seeing and dealing with so much of the gross aspect of it.
Yeah. I mean, from a selfish perspective, getting back to the longevity thing, you know, I would take that pill, dude. Like, you know, it's like, hey, I'll, you know, if I can afford it, whatever the pill is that makes you younger, whatever keeps you young. Yeah, I would do it for a while, you know, but then I think we'd be in a new era of like possibilities for the human race too. But you know, one of the best, I think, areas that that AGI will help us with is scientific discoveries and applications of scientific knowledge. For example, you know, things like Bitcoin, like there's no new breakthroughs there. It was just piecing together stuff that had, you know, been the latest research was like early 90s or something like that. So I think there's a ton of opportunity out there for a system that can handle like all of the white papers there are, right? Mm-hmm. And just be like, oh, well, here's a solution for this and this and this and this. You know, I think that's actually going to happen, you know, this decade. We're going to see very rapid new applications of existing basic research, but we'll also see new research and, you know, fundamental research in different directions, you know, directed by AGI. Hopefully.
Again, we started this conversation talking about Dune. We're all sci-fi fans, but this is a question basically based on that. The idea of, if you go out in the night sky and you look up, there's millions of planets out there, there's millions of stars. If we're at this point in technology advancing to this level, like, are we the only people that are doing this or have done it? I mean, we don't have to be people, but it's like the odds are, I think, it's kind of stupid to think that we're the only, it's so fucking human to think we're the only intelligent life
forms.
Well,
we're likely in a simulation, right? That's trillions of simulations deep. Like I know that that's like a sidestepping that, sure. But when you get into that, then you have to open up the possibility that like we are, this is some directed thing, you know, like, I mean, who knows? Fermi's paradox is one of the most like perplexing things there are. Like where is everybody?
You know? Right, right. Because simulation, as much as simulations can seem like simulation theory can seem crazy to people, it's not that far off and different than string theory and that same idea.
Yeah, just neither of them can be proven, right? Sure, and they don't have any direct impact on us, but it does mean that an AGI might be able to hack out of the simulation and up a few levels and back down, you know, who knows?
Right.
Or generate trillions of sub, you know, universes, you know, like once we hit AGI and superintelligence and the singularity, you know, who knows?
Well, I mean, again, like that idea of if we can keep creating different technologies, then like, why not create a technology like to go out into the past our universe or not past our universe, past our solar system, things along these lines, it doesn't have to be a human. So no. It's like, that's where it seems like if we're, it really at the tip of the iceberg of the technology that could create this kind of stuff, then shouldn't there be other ones that do it?
Yeah, that's well? A premise of 2001. Like right. the monolith is a von Neumann machine, a self-replicating machine.
Right.
And like von Neumann himself theorized that like any species that reaches the level of self-replication like that would colonize the entire galaxy in something like 100 million years. So like, you know, not that hasn't happened, right? And no one has been able to prove him wrong yet. And it does seem likely that, well, we're self-replicating machines. If let go, we'll, you know, not at that speeds, but we will, sure. We would create probes, self-replicating probes, exactly like in 2001. So yeah, that Fermi's paradox has bothered me for a very long time.
Dan, feelings?
No comment.
I mean, it is, especially like what we've created in drone technology. I mean, it's why can't it eventually just be something that goes somewhere else?
Sure, and self-replicates is the key part.
Right.
Being able to take fair. Local resources and reconstruct itself. Yeah.
Yeah, it's troubling. It's confusing. But I guess as we start to wrap up this conversation, do you think there's hope for humanity?
For us, I think our generation, like we're going to live another hopefully 40 plus years or whatever. I think we're going to see some of the most incredible things ever. You know, I think to me, the horror already happened with the Holocene extinction. You know, I'm not impressed with us as a species. I think, you know, these changes that will look really horrible for humans will probably be a good thing for our like survival and the planet's survival. So I'm optimistic. Optimistic that that we'll see a lot of changes that will be hard to look at in the short term, but probably good in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I think even just look at technologies that have good ideas. I mean, think about like nuclear power. It's great in theory. It's obviously very dangerous, but at the same time, like countries like ours have stopped any sort of advancement or going into it since like the 90s. And if we can start to look at these type of things that aren't going to ruin the planet, if we can have different types of technology that can create more safety measures and be in a way that we don't have to like burn shit to, you know, to fuel our ever hungry desire for power, then I think, you know, there's really good things that can come out of it that can be beneficial for the planet. But, you know, it's then just how do you get the human aspect out of it and do it for the greater good. And this is, again, like my fucking hippie liberal mind, just like, just do it because it's the right thing to do. You know, and, you know, it's even my dad has, you know, talked to me about, it's like, sometimes people do the right thing for the wrong reason. It's like, I'm cool with that too. Like, you know, just as long as we're doing the fucking right thing. But, Dan, is there hope for us?
Yeah. I mean, I think if the right people are leveraging the technology in the right ways, it's possibly a very good future. But there's definitely a negative aspects of human nature that are going to be fighting against that. And that's kind of the gist of the issue in my mind, you know. But I think that the possibilities are so huge. If we reach AGI and ASI, anything is possible, and that would be amazing. But it is also scary. But yeah, in the near term, there's going to be a lot of turmoil as things change.
Yeah. I think, you know, the issue for us, me and you, Dan, and not necessarily for Justin, is like, we have children. And it's a hard thing to think about. I mean, I don't know if your son is like, because of what you do, we see what our parents do. And, you know, sometimes you're either like, well, I don't want to do anything like that. I see what you're doing. Like my parents being business owners and doing what they're, it's like, I don't want to get involved with your business at all. No, thank you. You never sleep. But, you know, it's when you just want the best life for your children, like how do we, it's going to be tricky of how we guide them through this like unknown future.
Yeah. Like technology is already a huge challenge just in general.
Sure.
Games and just technology addiction from, you know, having it around from such a young age, it's already a challenge. And, so I don't know what AI is going to do about that. And I don't know if he's like inspired by what I'm doing or not, you know, to answer your question. But I'm, you know, I'm hopeful that AI can have answers to, I don't mean it like in some like ethereal way, but like it, like create intelligent like ways to deal with these types of issues of like, you know, technology addiction and whatever, yeah. You know, in like even taking over my failing as a father, like in not being able to guide him in some specific way, like if we can use AI to even help nudge humanity in the right way. But then again, it's like who decides what's the right way and how do we align the AI with who that reasoning or like that direction, like who decides that?
Yeah. I think there's a tricky aspect. I remember even, I was never really a gamer, but you know, when I used to live with Justin, it was like, you got really into gaming for quite some time. And it's like, you know, I would, you know, a new game came out, you got sucked into it, could play it a lot. You had like with your old place where we used to have band practice, you have like LAN parties. And I was like, this is super weird. Like, okay, I've never, you know, just not really my bag. But like with AI, with algorithms, it's like, we just try to create something that's quote unquote more fun, but also more addictive.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as, well, that's kind of like how the addiction works with like social media. That's all driven by earlier neural networks, from my understanding. Mm. It's like not like generative AI, but like they're using models to figure out like what interests you and what to feed you next.
Sure.
in the algorithm and optimize your eyes. And, you know, as long as we like, there's going to be super awesome AI integrations with games. Like you'll be able to create any game. It'll be like the holodeck, like in the near term, in the next couple of years, I would say there will be like holodeck video games ish. You know, you'd be like, make a game that does this and you will be exploring that world within seconds. Hmm. Well, as long as we have enough compute,
sure.
You know, but that is going to be totally plausible. So yeah, as long as it's not also trying to, well, I guess it, by nature, that's kind of addictive. That right. could be addictive. But adding a component of that where like someone, if like their advertising gets involved in that, then they're going to try and get you to stay in that. Then, and using AI to try and keep you there, that could be dangerous for sure.
Yeah. I remember, you know, when my son was born, a guy who was a friend of mine was just like, just make sure you limit the amount of time he has on an iPad. And I was like, okay. I mean, he watches TV, but he doesn't have any devices. Like, you know, he likes drawing and playing with Play-Doh and going outside and playing at the park and stuff like that. And I'm just trying to, you know, I'm not trying to be a Luddite, but I'm trying to nourish that as long as I can.
Absolutely.
Where it's just like, just go like, go fucking touch the grass, dude. Go like run around, skin your knees, like do whatever. Just, you know, go have fun because that part of the world will always be there. It's going to, like, you're going to get sucked in because it's either you're going to be Amish or you're going to, like, just enter the world and that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of the scary aspect of where we are. I think as parents from, like, you know, our parents' generation, it's the technology hadn't changed that much. Like, the upheaval of, you know, using seatbelts and car seats was, like, hilarious in society. Like, fuck that. You can't tell me what to do. And it's like, now we just give everything to these machines. Uh-huh. And that's like, oh God, like the trust we have for technology and the implications and the problems it can create is just, that's the terrifying fact for me and being a parent.
I'm enjoying this nice little bubble.
Sure.
Where the AI is like fun and promising and it's a tool rather than what it's going to become.
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, you both know it more than I, and it's, you know, exciting and scary, but yeah, I'm going to keep doing things analog as long as I can.
Yeah. There's a new music generator. Did you see it, Suno? Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I was like, you know what? Even like, I wouldn't like create something from that and then claim it as my own. You know, is like I wouldn't like release a CD of music I created on Suno, but like it could make me write 20 songs in a day and like. And learn them, like, and be able to play them out. Like, you could very quickly be like, hey, get a couple guys together and, like, create, like, a whole album's worth of music in, like, 10 minutes and then just learn the songs and play them. And that would be so much fun. But that's like, kind of the piece that I think that will live on is the human artistry of, like I would only buy something from someone who actually painted it, but verifying that's debatable. But like, sure. You know, if you can look at the paint or something like that and somehow get a good feel for it, or if you trust the artist or the wherever it's being you're buying it from, that's one thing. And like I was like, you know what, at least I have this backup career as a musician. Like I think people probably would rather see humans play than robots play,
right?
You know, so there's that. I think that, you know, some of the while the like the artistic stuff is the first to be like kind of conquered by AI. Mm-hmm. I think it's still like more interesting from a human perspective to actually see a human do it or to get it from a human. Like
sure.
That's the pieces that like I wouldn't mind replacing or like I'm kind of looking forward to if it like works out. It'll be pretty cool. Be able to just like create a TV series of any concept you want. Mm. You know, and be like, oh, make a show about blah, 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 blah. And then you have some brand new content that's all your own to watch. Like,
but no one else will watch it because they'll generate their own content.
Right. Yeah, and that might be, you know, segregating too, because, you know, you don't have the social bonding over, you know, episodes, that kind of thing. So, you know, maybe that's not super ideal, but it sounds fun just in the same way that I had, like, and it's maybe just like humans will adapt because even though like I had fun for 5 minutes generating songs, I'm not spending all day generating songs.
Right.
Like I'm still listening to the music I like or learning, you know, finding new music by what I think are real humans and enjoying that. But still maybe I'll come back. It's like a toy, you know? Right. And so maybe there'll be shows that are actually created by real people and maybe I'll be in the mood for something that I just had this idea for something crazy. Or like, you know, if there's this really awesome book, you could be like, hey, turn this book into a, you know, a TV show. And, you know, that's possible.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the tricky thing that industry is looking at. And that's what a lot of the strike was about, was, you know, basically protecting writers from AI was a portion of it as well, because, you know, that's, you know, they're going to be so easily replaced, but you know, like you said, there's this social bonding, there's these different things if it's completely just catered to you. So I think there's going to be like a shift. And, you know, the job I had before I moved out of the city, I worked in photo shoots for years, and it's just like, it's going to be like dominoes falling. I realize that the crew of 13 to 15 people could go down to like two, and that could happen really soon, but it's going to be the industry kind of catching up and trusting it. Which is going to be, and then just finally someone be like, it's kind of like years I always talked about, like legal weed. It's like, there's so many people against it, but it's just going to get the right amount of people to be like, no, we really can make a lot of money. And it's like, they're like, oh shit. Yeah, you're right. So it's like, there's the dominoes will fall and it'll be kind of interesting to just see kind of what happens with all this, because I knew as I walked away where, you know, like I said, I go back to my job and they're like, you want to come back? And I'm like, no. And I'm also like, if I did come back for what, like 3 years? Like we're all kind of in that phase where it's just like,
ooh. No, let's not count our chickens before they're hatched though. Right. Like LLMs and this ChatGPT revolution might be a plateau.
Right.
It might be unlikely, but you know, here we are, and we're still doing fine, and things are being disrupted at kind of a steady pace, but not catastrophic. So hopefully we can stay at this pace. To bring it back to Dune, I think it's, you know, I think the new Dune movies are fine. They're good. They're fun, but they changed the books in some way. And it's, I find it like sort of ironic and funny that the best AI or the best Dune movie will be created by AI.
Sure.
You know?
Well, I mean, you know, the first one was so hated.
Yeah, I actually like David Lynch's Dune.
I do.
Like, he didn't get a chance to do all the things that he wanted, sure. And there was editing problems, but I like actually his vision a little bit better than Villeneuve's, but that's my own personal taste.
And you got Sting.
Oh, yeah, dude. That was a great one.
All right, well, thanks, guys. I appreciate that. I felt really dumb, but that's important. That's why I brought you. So I wanted to, you know, talk to people who just utilize this, because, as I said, I just kind of always move away from technology because I get frustrated by it, which, you know, for better or worse. And so you guys will take over the world. And when you do, just if you need something that's painted by hand or something, you need a carpenter, give me a call.
Will do. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's Jeff from Jeff's Used Condom Emporium. We're keeping sex safe and cheap. I know it sounds gross, but let's think about it for a second. Condoms are made from latex, which comes from rubber trees, so let's stop killing the environment just so we can get our rocks off. And don't worry, all the condoms we get go through a multi-step cleaning and sanitation process, so they're good to go. Wondering how you can get involved? Well, we appreciate it. Just simply save your used condoms in a bag and ship them to Jeff's Condom Emporium, or simply drop them off at one of our licensed providers, Walmart, Dollar General, Starbucks, Dunkin' D's. They're all looking at keeping you safe, people. Thinking about getting on board and trying this out? Well, think about purchasing one of our snack packs. It comes with a variety of size and colored condoms. Also comes with munchies and a very own cock ring. You can hook this cock ring up to your car horn or your doorbell. Wait a minute. You're thinking the other one, aren't you? You dirty bird. And for those of you out there wondering, why we charge for this kind of service? Simple. It's America, dummy. It's capitalism. Plus, to be honest, most people think what we do is a little strange. But still, we're bringing you a high-quality product at a low, low price. So next time you're at the store looking for supplies to get your friskies on, think about Jeff's Used Condom Emporium.